this recording studio somewhere far, far away.
You bugger.
Say, kids, what time is it?
It's time.
The Mary Whitehouse Experience.
Tonight, on the Big Deal Over the Top Investigative Reporter Voice Experience, we look at Britain's transport systems in crisis. Also, we look at why Big Deal Over the Top Investigative Reporters always pause just before the end of the sentence.
The unmistakable noise so familiar to residents of towns and cities across Britain. The noise of the BBC sound effects record they always use for features on traffic congestion.
But it's not just the roads. Britain's railways are grossly overcrowded, with many intercity services offering worse than cattle truck conditions. The cattle don't have to put up with Max Pack's tea or sit next to a smelly heifer wearing a Walkman. Environmentalists claim that officialdom is very ignorant when it comes to transport. There are ministers who think that a contraflow system was something Oliver North set up for arms sales. Nowadays, there is even congestion in the air. This is a phenomenon of the 20th century. The first ever flight was made by the Wright brothers in 1903. Their plane only flew 100 yards before it had to land. Nowadays, these are known as Boeings.
But will things improve in the future? With the rapid leaps in technology, all indications are that soon we will be able to travel in time as well as distance. But will the service be any better?
We announce the departure from platform 4 of the 1750 to 1570. This service will call at Second World War, First World War, Crimean War, and Waterloo. Change at Waterloo for French Revolution and all stations to the late 15th century. Please note that sandwiches will not be invented before 1820. We apologise for the delays of this service in the era of the mid-13th century. This was due to Black Death and signal failure. The Neolithic Knight Rider is now arriving at Platform 13, calling at Primeval Swamp, Dinosaur, Mammal, Bronze Age, Ancient Greece, Rome, Hastings, Agincourt and Reading. The train will then proceed to Galileo, where it will be divided. The front portion will accept the concept of a heliocentric universe, while the rear portion will cling to a belief in Ptolemaic epicycles and a flat earth. Passengers travelling in the front portion of the train without tickets are liable to be tortured by the Inquisition. Thank you.
It's the Mary Whitehouse Experience.
And now it's time for the Skint Video Karaoke Experience. The first number this week comes to you from the Water Boys.
By the rivers of Great Britain, we drank it down. Yeah, we spewed when we tasted aluminium. Only Gridley flogging off our waterways. Will you do one thing for me? If water is sold like petrol, can I have mine lead free?
As people gathered in Wiltshire to catch a distant glimpse of the oldest stones in the world, apart from Ronnie Wood and Bill Wyman, an ancient druidic melody drifted across the barbed wire.
Are you going to Salisbury Plain? Helped along by 10,000 ponies. They love the pagan mystical rites. It reminds them of their Masonic ceremonies.
More rock now. Susan Vega was the victim of numerous death threats at the Glastonbury Festival. Here's a clue as to why.
My name is Luca. I live on the second floor. I saw that Joni Mitchell, and you've heard this thing before.
And now the imposter himself, Elvis Costello, with a song for the Duchess of York.
Ferguson, you hate your baby, so do we. Ferguson, why don't you go for a ski? Hazelnut yogurt, preferably.
Picture this.
Since we've been doing this show, there is one breed of people who up till now we've scrupulously avoided attacking. Disc jockeys. This is because we work for Radio 1. However, as this is the last show for a while, here we go. The thing about DJs is that they are wacky and zany. The two worst things you can possibly be, apart from little and large.
Or at least they're always telling us how wacky and zany they are.
Hey, I just don't know what's going on here. It's just chaos, it really is. They're nutters here, mad. Mad the whole lot of them. And I'm the nuttiest of them all. I can't believe they just let me loose here in the studio with my grey hair and my Lancia and my farmhouse in Sussex.
The ethos of DJism is insistent fun. In the world of the DJ, everyone is always having fun, wherever they may be.
Hi, and it's great to be here for the Radio 1 Roadshow. Hello, Beirut! I can't hear you. Okay, now it's time for a funny noise. And now here's Smiley Molly with Bits and Pieces.
DJs also represent a collection of the ugliest men seen outside the flying pickets. One only has to think of Andy Peebles, Pete Murray and Gloria Honeyford.
Now, seriously though, apparently the future of Simon Bates' Our Tune is presently in the balance. It all depends on listeners writing in to say whether they like it or not. And I'd like to take this opportunity to implore everyone listening now to write in and say that they do like it. Because it does cheer me up every day to hear a laughable catalogue of personal disaster. I particularly like the ones about a woman, let's just call her Linda. And Linda has a baby, and you know, the baby was mentally handicapped, and the doctors did all they could, but then it died, and then on the way to the funeral, the hearse crashed, and all the guests died, and then, you know, she thought nothing else could go wrong, but then her boyfriend got cervical cancer, and, you know, then there was a minor nuclear accident underneath her settee. But one thing has kept her going throughout all this, and that's Shut Up Your Face by Joe Dolce.
We have to credit some DJs, however, with creating characters that have filtered into the national consciousness. One thinks of Arnold the Wonder Dog, Gervais, and of course, Mr. Mad.
Now then. So happens, so dignified, that I am completely senile, as it happens. Now, for 2,000 points, can anyone tell me where I can buy some incontinence pants?
But what's the real reason for all of this resentment? Well, it's quite simple. We are the only people on Radio 1 never to have presented Top of the Pops. And they're even getting radio newsreaders and continuity announcers and kids' TV presenters on it now. I mean, what next?
And now it's time for Top of the Pops with Alistair Burnett and Johnny Morris.
Well, hello and welcome to Top of the Pops. You know, I was speaking to Phil Collins the other day and I said, hello, Phil, and he said, hello, Johnny. And you've recorded a new album, have you? It's a new album. Oh, that's good. Now, what do you think, Alistair?
Earlier today, Bananarama confirmed reports that they have released a new single. And I believe we can go over to them in a few moments. Meanwhile, protests continue, where still no one from the Mary White House Experience has been asked to present Top of the Pops.
Next week on the Mary White House Experience, we'll be looking for a new radio station. Good night.
Hello, and this week on the Press Review Experience, I would like to enter the world of the Daily Star. Considering that politically there are terrible things going on in the world which bear examination, it's no surprise to discover that the front page headline in the Star is Star Named in Drugs and Sex Shocker. And we find that East German ice skater Katharina Witt has been taking anabolic steroids. But luckily, some dirty doctor has been dragged from the depths of poor taste to point out that anabolic steroids have sexy side effects. Which means that when sportswomen use them, they make them so crazy for passion that they have to be satisfied by their trainers. Personally, I've never found Reeboks very satisfying as a sexual aid, but there you go. And, of course, there's no mention of the men vaulting about on their poles or grasping each other's batons. Typical. The filthy doctor giving the scientific treatise on the sexy side effects of anabolic steroids laments the fact that he was, in fact, the trainer of the all-male Austrian ski jump team, so didn't actually get ravished by any women. Pity he didn't train the English team, really, or I'm sure Eddie Edwards would have given him one. But there were a couple of interesting little articles. Apparently, British cab drivers are taking language lessons in order to anticipate further links with Europe, so I'm sure we can expect bonjour, mate, je ne suis pas un racist, but... And the letters page contained a couple of really side-splitting contributions about a couple who put their passports in the oven and then nearly cooked them. Hysterical. And somebody who cancelled their milk and papers when they went on holiday only to find a telephone directory on their doorstep when they got back. Very funny, eh? And finally, a tiny little article about ice cream for dogs in America. Apparently it's chicken liver flavour, so people won't steal it. Well, that's wrong. I flew over last week and nicked a ton of the stuff. Ate it all in one sitting, and of course when it comes out the other end, it's going to be tomorrow's edition of The Star. Thank you.
The Labour Party is now 14% ahead in the polls. This may represent a genuine leftward shift in British culture. Those normally associated with the right of Hitler will suddenly change tack.
I had old Winston Silcott in the back of my cab the other night. Ah, he's lovely, geezer, lovely. Gentle as a lamb, sweet as a nut, he really was. But I'll tell you what, string him up, I reckon. That's what you should do, string him up. Hanging's too good for him, you know, the ruling class, that is.
The press would all swing considerably to the left. I can see the headlines now. The Sun.
Maggie out.
The Star.
We love you, Neil.
The Daily Telegraph.
Vote Conservative.
The pictures on page 3 of The Sun may also look slightly different.
Yes, tantalising. Leon Trotsky is just one of this week's line of socialist stunners. He's certainly put our readers into a state of permanent revolution, so if you're stuck for a date, pick him. He certainly knows how to break the ice at parties, especially Stalinist ones.
Advertising, which has recently been becoming an exclusively yuppie preserve, will change its priorities.
Oh, hello. Look, this is terribly embarrassing. I've just moved in next door and I'm having a dinner party and I've just run out of coffee.
Oh, well, I've got some gold blend.
Sorry, I don't drink that shit. Haven't you got any Nicaraguan?
Well, actually, now you mention, I just happen to have 5 crates of Sandinista Rica, made entirely from scrapings from underneath General Ortega's fingernails.
Oh, lovely. Do you fancy a shag, then?
And as British sacred cows tumble one by one, even the most fervent royalists may shift their allegiance.
My husband and I would like, at this time of year, to abdicate. What I say is, smash the monarchist scumbags. I mean, they do nothing. They are just a waste of workers' money, especially that bloody Princess Diana. She thinks she's so bleeding superior. So, I'm handing over the royal line of the House of Windsor to Barbara Windsor. From now on, all subjects will address Her Majesty as Fua. My name's Elizabeth Regina Rex Victoria Ottoline Alexandra Windsor. Good night.
This.
And now, the Exam Experience Part 2, concluding our special feature which aims to help you if you're facing GCSEs or A-levels at the moment. Last week we looked at French history and English. This week we start with a more general look at things to remember in exams.
The first thing to remember about an exam is when it is. The exam timetable will be announced several weeks ahead, in time for you to work out which of your friends finish their exams after you do, thus enabling you to really annoy them by inviting them to parties they can't go to because they're still revising.
Beware, however, that some of them may still turn up and revise at the party. There's no worse party pooper than the person who tries to get everyone to dance to the Linguaphone conversational German record.
Do not be swayed by the great myths about exams. Everyone has heard the apocryphal stories.
And of course, you know, it was absolutely incredible because he went in, right, and the question was, is this a question? Okay, and he just wrote, if this is an answer. And you know, the incredible thing was that he failed completely.
Oh yeah, right, no, that's amazing. Because I knew this bloke, and he went into a 3.5-hour paper, yeah, and he just wrote his name at the top of the paper, and walked out! And he got the highest mark ever recorded at Sandhurst.
Yeah. Now, in an exam situation, it's essential that you plan your time. In a typical 3-hour paper, if you plan your time carefully, the exam ought to go like this. 9 a.m, into exam room. Turn over paper. Realise you're in the wrong exam.
9.05, arrive in correct room, complete silence.
9.06, you realise that the person next to you is going to be coughing all through the next 3 hours.
9.07, turn over paper, read through instructions.
Answer at least one question from sections A and C, and either two questions from section B or one question from section D and three questions from part 2 of section B. Do not answer two questions from part 1 of section A if you have also answered any one or more questions of sections 5 to 12 in section D, unless you have answered at least one question from 1 to 4 in part 3 of section F. But candidates wishing to answer three questions in section D should not attempt more than one question from part A of section B of question C, but should instead flip vainly through the paper, hoping desperately to find a question on something they'd revised. All candidates are therefore advised to ignore this incomprehensible crap and get on with the exam.
9.30, give up trying to understand instructions, decide on first question to answer.
9.35, look around room and panic that everyone else has written more than you.
9.40, plan first essay.
9.45, start writing first essay.
9.46, someone farts and everyone starts giggling.
10 o'clock, 200 digital watches make horrid beeping noises.
10.05, the hardest person in the class walks out early.
10.06, the hardest person in the class is pushed back in again by his mum.
10.35, someone feels sick and the invigilator briefly leaves the room. 200 people turn to each other and whisper,
what's your mate number four?
Now, what about those parts of exams which don't involve writing? First, there are these science practicals. Biology, which is normally hacking a locust to pieces. Chemistry, which is normally boiling some copper sulfate. And physics, which is normally either accelerating subatomic alpha particles to near light speeds in an attempt to study the origins of the universe, or melting some ice in a saucepan. The important thing to remember with practicals is to write down what should have happened and not what actually did happen. A correct answer looks like this.
Objective experiment. To effect a reaction between potassium permanganate and manganese sulfide. Method. The potassium permanganate was placed in a test tube and heated over a Bunsen burner. The resulting solution oxidized with the manganese to produce a sublimated solution.
Even when, if you'd been absolutely honest, you would have written this.
Objective experiment. To mix up the mauve stuff with the smelly yellow stuff. Method. The potassium stuff was placed in a test tube and held over a Bunsen burner. The test tube broke. We tried it again, nothing happened, so we poured some on the desk to see what it would do. The desk disintegrated, half the class are now blinded, and I'm writing this with my one remaining hand.
When you've finished your exams, there are three things left to do. One, pretend that you've done really badly and did absolutely sod all work. Two, go through the paper with all your friends and realise that you actually have done really badly. And three, borrow your parents' car, stay out really late and drink beer and everything. Good night.
Hello everyone, my name's Mark Thomas. This is the bit in the show where I discuss the topic of the week and then I come amongst you and get your views and opinions, and you just look terrified as I try and shove the mic down your throat. Two things that have really, really got to me this week. The first one was, I don't know if you noticed that a soldier in Ireland who shot dead a Sinn Féin councillor while he was going to a football match, the bullets ricocheted off the road and killed him. He was fined. Which I thought was quite magnificent, really. I mean, you've just killed someone. You've killed someone. That's 50p. Oh, sorry about that. I was absolutely stunned, though, because what he was charged with, he was charged with negligent discharge. What's that? That sounds like something your mum accuses you of when you're 14. What's this on the sheet? Can't you use tissues like other boys?
negligent discharge. That's incredible. And the thing was, he said that mitigating circumstance was that he handled the gun when he had wet hands. What? An AK-47 and a towel, easily confused. That annoyed me. The second thing that annoyed me, for some obscure reason, there's suddenly an outbreak of couples just crowding into public places, snogging. And they're standing there, tongues down. It's like you walk through Hyde Park, it's like a penguin colony feeding their young. It's incredible. And I don't like that at all. I hate it. I can't stand people enjoying themselves. It pisses me off. Because there's so much shit and misery in the world. And what are they doing? Just mouth-to-mouth dental flossing. The only good, the only brilliant thing is actually with all the couples snogging and getting to it. Right, all the businessmen are standing watching them in the park, and if they're doing that, that means British Telecom are losing a packet on their jism on my juicy jodper line. And the thing is, you can't do anything to stop the couples. I feel really, I want to do things. I want to throw water over them. Tell them to stop, but you can't because you'll get accused of wasting water and arrested. And so we'll have to use acid or bleach. In some parts of the country, you can actually get that out of the tap. But nothing's the matter with the water system here. Just don't drink from a Tupperware mug. Actually, what I want the couples to do is just stay at home. So we can board you up. Just stay there. Because the couples are sort of sitting there all day and going, well, what would you like to do? Oh, I don't know, darling. Whatever you want to do. Well, I don't mind really doing anything, really. I just want to be with you, darling. Well, darling, I just want to be with you, darling. Should we go and snog in public? Okay, darling. That really, really annoys me. You could take them anywhere, and they only talk to other couples. Couples only talk to other couples. That's the rule. And they find beauty in desolate areas. You could take them all over to Ethiopia during the famine. They're going, oh, it's so nice here. Well, I'm just with you, darling. I don't mind how it looks like. You see this man holding his dying wife, and she's dying, and they walk up and go, how long have you been together? We've just been together a month, but I think it's pretty permanent. Would you like to come to dinner? Because that's a big thing with couples. You've got to invite people out. If you're a couple, you have to invite people over to your place for dinner. And if you're a single person, that's really piss off. That is bad news, because you have to bring a friend. Yeah. Well, that doesn't matter, Mark. Just come along, bring a friend. Doesn't matter. Just bring anyone. You know, you never know what might happen. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to turn up and go, hello, this is Jane. Oh, hello, Jane. When did you meet Mark? Oh, about half an hour ago, when I asked him on the tube if he read the Bible often. Stick with Jane. So let's get your a few opinions about coupledom. First of all, have we got any couples in tonight? It's brilliant. They're nudging each other going, well, would you consider us a couple? I don't know. Oh, whatever you think, Poppet, I don't really mind. Have we got any couples in? Come on. Would you describe yourself as a couple?
Yeah.
Are you married?
Yes.
Do you like it?
Oh, definitely.
That was said a bit too earnestly, really, wasn't it? All right, can I just ask you some very simple... I'll ask you some really simple questions. First of all, do you snog in public?
No. We're never together in public.
You're never together in public? That's a good policy if you're a couple. Yes, my soulmate, my love, my partner, my heart's desire. I'll just go away now. So you're not together in public, but you're here. This is a one-off. Okay, that's fine. What, anniversary, what?
The rest of them come to see Phantom of the Opera, and we ended up coming here.
Right, now it's time for the punchline competition. Now it's time for a new pair of lips. Now it's time for the punchline competition. Before the show, the studio audience were asked to think of a funny punchline for the following joke. What did Prince William say to Prince Harry as they watched their mum come second? Now I've collected up all the answers on bits of paper, which I've got here in my hand, and the best one will win a prize, a once-weekly capital card. So... here we go, then. What did Prince William say to Prince Harry as they watched their mum come second? Which one of those men over there is our daddy? That's from the producer once again. Every week he tries, he really should get sacked. What did Prince William say to Prince Harry as they watched their mum come second? Oh, shit. Oh, well, here's your money. Well, I presume that's something to do with the bet and nothing to do with the fact that Prince Harry is Prince William's rent boy. Obviously, she's not an East German athlete. That's from the European aware, Tim Callahan. Unfortunately, not a funny person. I told you not to pinch her bum. That's got from over there, which, you know, is pretty good considering it's crap. Just think, Harry, if she had won, Daddy would have to kiss her. That's making me feel sick just thinking of it, so I'm not giving that one. It's all right, Harry. They won't disqualify her as long as they don't do a dope test. I presume that's not from Ben Johnson. What did Prince William say to Prince Harry as they watched their mum come second? Well done, Daddy. I should get in some more delay spray. It's by Hugh Dennis of Punt and Dennis, unfortunately, so he can't win the prize. Gaga, goo goo, gaga, yeah. I think it's from Mandy Smith. This is a good one. What did Prince William say to Prince Harry as they watched their mum come second? Fly Fishing by J.R. Hartley. You can say that in any context, it just gets a laugh. I don't know who wrote it. I presume J.R. Hartley wrote it. So he wins the capital card. Big round of applause for J.R. Hartley.
So now let's slip on the moccasins and trudge mock wearily down to the front gate of number 19 John Alderton Way for the last ever episode of our comedy series, All Cozy at Home in the Family House.
Oh dear, now that was one of the many cock-ups that happened during the series of All Cozy at Home in the Family House. Exactly what Zebedee would have made of life in John Alderton Way is something my scriptwriter couldn't think of a punchline for. But now, have a listen to this and see if you can spot what goes wrong in this little sitcom misunderstanding.
Mother, was that our daughter just flouncing off all made up? I've got a good mind to stop her.
She won't be doing anything we didn't do at that age.
Well, in that case, I'm definitely going to stop her.
Well, did you spot what was wrong there? That's right. It wasn't funny. And now we come to that category of cock-up known as the fluff. Now, I should explain for those of you not in the trade that the fluff is slang for those bits of blanket wool found in the buttock cleft. Or in my case, Frank Muir's buttock cleft. Also, it's when actors do the wrong lines, like this.
Vicar, Vicar, what on earth is that infernal noise?
Listen, Wixie, I'm your mother and that's that. Sorry, wrong lines, everybody.
Another category in this cacophony of catastrophic cock-ups and calamitous things is what we in the trade call gremlins. Now, what you should know before you listen to the next extract is that the man who does the sound effects has just been jilted by the woman who plays the daughter. Now, read on.
Where on earth is our daughter?
There she is.
Hello. I think I'll just sit down in this robust, galvanised steel chair. Well, anyway, here comes my new boyfriend.
Oh, look, there's the Queen. Go and say hello to her daughter.
Hello, Your Majesty.
Hello, young lady.
I'd just like to say that I... Oh, God, oh, no. Oh, I'm so embarrassed.
Sorry, everybody. I think I've shit my pants.
Oh.
Well, how will daughter get out of this one? How will the Queen get out of her soiled pants while still maintaining her regal composure? And does Dennis Norton have a clipboard on his lap just to record how many times he's been to the toilet in the last hour? And is our entire studio audience always composed of people who couldn't get into Phantom of the Opera? We'll never know, because that was the last ever All Cozy at Home in the Family House.
You've been listening to The Mary Whitehouse Experience. It was written and performed by David Baddiel, Rob Newman, Steve Punk, Hugh Dennis, Joe Brand, Mark Thomas and Skint Video. The producer was Bill Dare.